I'd like to start, like I do every month lately, with the employee that we'd like to give a candy bar to. For those of you who are new, we try to give a candy bar a month to someone that the management team has gotten together and said, we think this person deserves some special recognition. We tend to give it to people who look at how we do processes and how we do business and either come up with a good idea, make somebody look really good. That is left to management's discretion. But today I'd like to give the candy bar to Ann Todd. And the reason, and the reason is because she just recently went through and figured out how to do our error reports better so that we can cut down on the number of errors that we ship, which of course saves us tons of time. And she also went through and set up, Sunlight not only does business with individual customers, but we do businesses also with some companies. And those people send in purchase orders, which then we would bill them and they send us a check later on. And worked hard to get some of our bigger companies that we do business with on what we call an ACH payment, which is a bank-to-bank kind of a deposit. It's something that happens very quickly, so it's not only more efficient for us, but it actually helps with our cash flow. So good job, Ann, and thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Appreciate it. And if you didn't understand that, don't ask me. Ask Ann. last month, for those of you who are here, I talked about a chapter from Vishal Mangalwadi's book. And if you can say that 10 times in a row, you're a better woman or man than I am. It's a compelling story written by, a compelling work written by an Indian Christian who, because he was raised in India, is able to travel the world and look at different the way different societies operate and make evaluations in ways that most of us are less aware of. Think of the fish living in the ocean. It's very hard to see what you've always known. I talked about his look at the dairy in Holland and how Holland somehow was different than how India did business. And he believed it was because the Bible had an impact on the morality of the people in Holland in a way that India has not yet been impacted in that way. And then I ended by challenging us to be the remnant of people who lived here in the United States and wanted to make a difference in the land where we are, where the Bible has been for many years but tends to be slipping. As I thought about what I wanted to talk about today, I thought I'd like to do another chapter from Mangalwadi's book. And I thought, well, which one do I do? Because each chapter deals with a different aspect of society. He covers things like justice. How did our moral code in the United States get written? How do families differ in the United States from the rest of the world? How does compassion differ? And we all know that in America, it tends to be a much more compassionate nation, numbers-wise, than anywhere else in the world. Why? What's the difference there? Each chapter focused on different things that he saw in the society of the United States that differed from the rest of the world. And the chapter I chose is the chapter on technology. And he opens that one by visiting, he talks about a visit that he made to Uganda. And while he's there, he notices the women carrying the water in pots on top of their head. He said, oh, this just reminds me of home. That's how the women carry water in India as well. But then he looked around and he went, but Uganda is so green. There's so much water, there's lakes, there's lush vegetation, very different than India. And he went, why is it that the women in Western Europe and America don't carry water on their heads? And he said, I believe it's because of the Bible. He said, if you don't have to go walk to some river somewhere, pick up a pot of water, I thought this quote was so striking. He said, why do Indians and Africans waste billions of man hours hauling water or collecting cow dung when women could be reading or teaching or planting or playing? Wow, good question. Good question. So then he goes out and he does some research and he finds some guy, Lynn White Jr.'s book. And his book states that the Bible It was the Bible that made medieval West the first civilization in history that did not rest on the backs of sweating slaves. Profound. He says, boy, if you think about the pyramids, they didn't give their slaves wheelbarrows. They carried all those heavy blocks and sweated. So how did the West escape that? I think it's a compelling story. He talks about how, we all know this. When Adam and Eve were in the garden, they had work to do. And I believe that when we get to heaven, we will also have work to do. So work is not the problem. What he believes is the issue is the toil. And when you think about the curse that was laid on Adam in the garden when they sinned, you will toil. By the sweat of your brow, you will produce crops. And he believes that the medieval monks, when they studied that passage, they said, we want to work, but we want to figure out how to get rid of toil. And here's another quote from his book. Toil came, I gotta quit spitting into this thing. Toil came as a result of sin, and salvation includes deliverance from sin as well as toil, from mindless, repetitive labor that requires no choice. And I think that that's something that when I think about Anne coming up with a way to do systems more effectively, I think that actually shows how we can get rid of mindless, repetitive, boring tasks so that we can do significant and important work. So I think it's really appropriate that we highlighted Anne today. He mentions in the book that when the elite in other cultures use technology for power and pleasure, prestige and torture, Christian monasteries began developing technologies that liberated powerless individuals from dehumanizing slavery. Toil is dehumanizing because it forces a human being to do what can be done by an ox, horse, wind, water, or wheels. The author goes on and compares Buddhist and Christian monks who went into the monasteries. Remember, he's referring back to the Middle Ages period of time in history. And both of those communities had men and women that, I don't know about women in Buddhist, men that chose to separate themselves from the daily working life so that they could focus on the things of God, of whatever their gods were. They said that both groups then, of course, were not married because they were single. And then neither group, therefore, had women who went out to collect the water, find the firewood, grind the grain, bake the bread. And in the difference came in that the Buddha, in his works, says, okay, go out and beg for your food. That's allowed. Whereas in Christian circles, the Bible said, he who does not work shall not eat. There's a strong division in the way the premises that the cultures are even based on happen. So then the Christian monks were going, okay, we don't have women do the work, like we so often do. That was a plug I shouldn't have put in there. Sorry, guys. So how do we get the work done so that we can still study the things of God, which is why we've collected, why we want to pray, why we want to do things that are important and significant, and we don't want to bake bread and we don't want to spend a lot of time drawing water. So they figured out how to move water easily from the rivers to the monasteries. They figured out how to grind the grain with water wheels. They figured out how to use technology to get rid of the jobs that they didn't think that they needed to do all day long, in order to do things that were of bigger purpose. Let's see. And it said, too, that the monks then, because they believed that study and thinking and learning about the things of God, they had time to think about the stars and study sciences and botany. Think Mendel, who was a medieval monk who started the whole science of genetics just by studying pea pods. That didn't happen in a void. It had to have time for people to think about the way the world worked and the way the things worked. Okay, what does this all have to do with sunlight? Okay. I believe that the Bible, and Mangalwadi in his book also says the Bible has had a huge impact on society, on Western society, the places where the Bible has been for generations. Because I believe he's really dead on to this, at sunlight, this fall, we're going to do another fundraiser. For many of you, we did a fundraiser last year among Sunlight students where they could have lemonade stands or clean out the car, then raise funds, and we raised funds to educate women in India. This year we're going to do something a little different. This year we're going to seek to translate an entire New Testament for a people group that has never had the Bible in a single word in their language. As I think about Mangalwadi's words about how significant the Bible has been, I've always recognized that the Bible's really important to individuals. Oh my goodness, what would I do if I didn't have my Bible? You know, if you couldn't find out the words of life and the truth and get the redirecting and the comfort and the joy that you get just from spending time in the Word. But I didn't realize, or I didn't recognize, how important it is for a full society. So as we think about a people group that has never had a single life-giving word. Never. They don't even have John 3:16, for crying out loud. They don't even know it exists. I thought, wow, what a strategic and an important thing we have an opportunity to take part in. So I'd like to encourage those of us who pray in the morning, if we would gather and covenant to cover this project in prayer. If I think about a nation, a people group that has never had the Bible, I think, boy, there's going to be a lot of resistance to getting this done. I think our enemy will not easily or gladly or willingly give up those people group that have bowed to him for millennium. So if we could cover this with prayer, I think that would have a huge impact in the heavenlies. I think too, if we would be great, you know, just, okay, back up a little bit. As we design these programs, we want to design them for the hearts of our kids. Most of us who are believers give charitably, and that's just part of who we are and goes with what the United States being a charitable nation. It's just part of our wharf and weff, whatever the phrase is. But for our children, they don't have that yet built into their lives. You can have very charitable parents and very selfish children. So I'd like us also to pray that God would impact the hearts of Sunlighter's kids, that they would be transformed from being, you know how kids can be, selfish, care for themselves, like all of us, without redemption. May it be that we somehow grab hold of the hearts of the kids and give them a bigger picture of the world and the great things that God can do. May this be a significant project for all of us, and may it be that as we have an opportunity to impact our world, may we do so gladly and with great joy. Thanks so much.